Third hour of 3D on this Wednesday afternoon. Darren, Derek, and Donick with you. Our man, Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst. Now, Chase is off on vacation celebrating. He's going to spend 8 days celebrating his 30th birthday. So Joel does not aware that Tim has special music. And so, Tim, I apologize on the front end, but you didn't get your music this week.
You know what? I was already kind of just down in the dumps since Chase wasn't around.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then for not to have the intro music, I actually...
Well, blame it on Chase, Tim, because Chase should have left direction.
Well, what's interesting is, you know, for to be BFFs, and he's on this eight-day...
Excursion.
Right, of his celebration of his 30th birthday. And yet, you know, I don't hear about you being on that trip.
You know, I have family in town.
Oh,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I have family. I mean, listen, look, I have an easy reason for that, man. Come on.
But you knew Chase's birthday. Y'all BFFs.
Why
you knew his birthday a year ago was going
to
be.
Why trying to divide us?
That's what we do when people are away.
Exactly. Chase has been telling us about this trip for like the last 3 or 4 months. So, I mean, you could have switched some things around.
At least made an appearance.
Exactly.
It's true.
We feel like this is right up your alley. We spent a bulk of today's show. We had on Greg Bishop from Sports Illustrated, who wrote, you know, Where Are They Now? The Vince Young, his journey about his football career. Certainly we covered him. We were around him the entire time he was here. Then we had Richard Deitch on from Sports Illustrated last hour, and we're just talking about how difficult it is to live up to the hype, right? And we've mm-hmm. kind of used the local angles that have happened here in this city and also the national angles and how difficult, and sometimes it ends up like Michelle Wee and Freddie Adu, and then sometimes it ends up like,
but those are two
James.
Very different outcomes, by the way. Michelle Wee is a lot more successful.
Michelle Wee
than
was more
Freddie
right.
Adu.
Freddie Adu is probably the biggest flop that we could come up with.
He doesn't
with
have a contract right now.
With all the hype that he had. When did it start? Like 12?
He was 14.
14?
He was signed to the MLS at age 14.
So, you know, he definitely was a flop. Michelle Wee, at least, is still on the LPGA Tour. But it's difficult. Bryce Harper's trying to get there. I wouldn't put him in that category, as in he is – you know, he has slayed it because he's had big hype for a long time out in Las Vegas as this baseball, you know, phenom. And LeBron James, too. Did you have any of that? I'm sure, playing your entire life, you had kids locally, you know, had tons of hype and either mm-hmm. lived up to it or didn't?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I just kind of give you, you know, a couple of examples that, you know, that I'm super familiar with them, but I think you guys know who Chris Drury is. Remember the hockey player?
Oh, sure.
Oh, yeah.
Chris Drury?
Little League World Series.
Little League World Series. Exactly right. So in New England, you know, at 12 years old, when Trumbull, Connecticut wins the Little League World Series, you know, Chris Drury at that point basically becomes a, you know, folk hero in New England because of, you know, kind of what they accomplished, you know, these little kids from Trumbull, Connecticut. Well, you know, he went on to be a very good hockey player. I believe he won the Hobey Baker. You know, maybe they won a national championship at BU. I know that he's won a gold medal, won a Stanley Cup. You know, so it was kind of interesting. Here's this guy who you know, was really high regarded, obviously different sport, but there was always hype surrounding him and then became a very successful hockey player. You know, my host on my recruiting trip to Notre Dame was Ron Powlis. You know, Ron Powlis was supposed to go to Notre Dame, be the starting quarterback, win 4 Heisman trophies, and then go be the number one overall pick. You know, it obviously didn't work out that way. I think he ended up being a 7th-round pick. His college career was up and down at best. You know, so, you know, those are things I feel like I don't know, either guys I knew or you know, people I just been around. Chris Herron, I think you guys maybe know his story.
Oh yeah. He's been in studio with us.
Yeah. So Chris, you obviously was a tremendous basketball player coming out of Massachusetts, and you know there was a lot of hype surrounding him. You know, obviously, you know his story's been you know pretty well documented, but you know not the success that you know people had envisioned you know, for him. So I think it's really, really hard when you are not old enough to either drive a car or, you know, buy a beer to be anointed as this, you know, superstar that's going to be that way. I mean, it's just, there's so many things that can get in the way of that. And so I think it's probably better to experience some of your success later in life when you've got a little bit more maturity and you're able to handle it differently.
Yeah, it's a really good point. And I think, you know, as we discussed, Vince Young was coming off the ultimate high, right? The Mount Rushmore of college football games. Texas, USC, national championship game. In this crazy game, one of the this epic game that we will always remember. And, of course, he has this magical game for his career. So he's coming off the ultimate high.
Mm-hmm.
And we still reference that game today like it just happened. And now, to me, just being around him and covering him here, this is just my opinion. I felt like once he got to this stage, then he needed to rewire himself and take a little bit different approach, because this game was going to be different than all the other levels leading up to this point. And he had been able to get away with it. And I don't think he ever rewired himself here, Tim. And he didn't have the makeup here and elsewhere, because obviously he had other stops. He didn't have the makeup to live up to all the hype he was going to have being the third pick in the draft and coming out of college.
Right, and that's why I think it's so important when you are evaluating a guy and you're getting ready to draft him high, which obviously he was. So when you go to Texas and you realize, man, this guy is a superstar in Texas. In the state of Texas, he's right now as big as, you know, Earl Campbell or Dirk Nowitzki or any of these guys. So, you know, he's handled this pressure, but, like, are we seeing any – you know, immaturity in him? Because even as great as he is at Texas, some things are going to have to change for him to have sustained success in the NFL. And that's why I think the rest of your organization, so whether it's who your quarterback coach is, how he's going to interact with him, how your head coach and offensive coordinator are going to interact with him, how the marketing department interacts with him, how the quarterback room, the guys you have on the roster, are going to interact with him. Who do you anticipate that he ends up being friends with on the roster? Is he going to be friends with guys on the roster that are burning at both ends? Or is he going to be friends with guys that, you know, are kind of football junkies, keep to themselves? Like, you know, you have to identify that. And you have to, I think you, in some ways, have to manage it. It's going to sound terrible, but almost as a parent, to try to figure out, you know what, you know, who do we want around him? I'll give you a good example. Like, for me, I ended up at the Giants, and not that they were ever worried about Eli in terms of, you know, how he was spending his free time. You know, I don't think that has ever been a concern of the Giants. But I will tell you 100%, I believe that they preferred me there over Jesse Palmer because of some of Jesse's other aspirations. And so I think it was a factor. It wasn't just about, you know, us as players. And so I'm not remembering who the backups were at the time and if Billy Volek was still here or who was there. But I think that stuff ends up being really important for Vince.
Well, we were going back through those days with Steve McNair gone, Billy Volek, who had had some prolific statistical games on a team that had no defense. He was putting up pretty good numbers. He looked like the heir apparent.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden, by the end of that camp, he was persona non grata, kind of kicked to the curb. They brought in Kerry Collins, 10 or 12 days before the season
I remember
started.
Us doing the show out at camp and going,
"That was
what
does
Kerry Collins have left in the tank?
It happened out of nowhere.
Well, we would find out he still had more left in the tank. But it would be a strange dynamic.
Do what? Kerry's been a starter, you know. Kerry was a high pick. He'd seen a lot of success. Like, listen, Drew Bledsoe is a great guy, and from what I've heard from, you know, people that are friends with Kerry now, they really like him. You know, guys that I really like are good friends with Kerry. Just like Drew Bledsoe, I find Drew to be a really, really good guy. But Drew never wanted to be a backup, you know? So He didn't want to back up J.P. Lossman in Buffalo. He didn't want to back up Tony Romo in Dallas. He didn't want to be – that role was of no interest to him. And so I would guess that Kerry was at a point – and, look, I'd probably feel a similar way if I were Kerry – that he didn't want to be a backup. And so, yeah, now all of a sudden it's like, look, Vince isn't going to be hanging out with Kerry, be spending a lot of time with Kerry, be trying to emulate the things that Kerry's doing. And then, look, that's not Kerry's fault. I just think that you – if you're when you're building a team, you're putting it together, you have to figure out, okay, who here is going to be a great example for this guy and reel him in a little bit and make sure that he shows up to the plane on time, all of that stuff.
Yeah, and they didn't have, obviously, that relationship. I think, in, as we talked about earlier, the only guy that was truly, maybe it would have had a different outcome, still don't know, but the only chance he had to kind of fixing some of these things that you're talking about, because there were other things. He was late to meetings. He was obviously late to playing. I mean, things we all knew about. And, you know, you always hear first one to the facility, last one to leave. I don't think you fit into that category. Was Steve McNair, and obviously Steve McNair, they couldn't keep both those contracts, and so Steve went to Baltimore.
Well, I'll give you an example in Philadelphia. That was perfect. Donovan McNabb's starting quarterback. You know, Doug Peterson, you know, is there to start the first couple games. Doug moves on. Corey Detmer, Donovan's rookie year, I believe, was on the IR maybe, or maybe he was on the roster. But Corey Detmer was kept around because Donovan trusted him, had a great relationship with him. And so they, you know, and so if Corey had to kind of to slow the start of the quarterback meeting down a little bit because Donovan was running a little bit late, he would do it. You know, if Donovan, you know, wasn't listening to Pat Shurmur, the quarterback coach at the time, you know, Pat would then go to Coy and be like, hey, listen, like, you know, we need to get Don to pick up the pace a little bit during the individual. Can you get that going? And Coy would get that going. The type of player that somebody is, you know, it is obviously not, you know, the only value that they can bring to the team. If you have a star player, which Don McNabb was, which Vince Young certainly, you know, had the potential to be and was at one point, sometimes you need guys to bridge the gap a little bit. And who knows, you know, maybe, you know, there would have been somebody there that would have been a better fit for that.
More with Tim Hasselbeck from ESPN, their NFL analyst, our guy every week at this time. We'll come back with more with him next on 3D.
Catch it, 3D. Derek and Donick on the phone with us, as he is every week at this time. Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst. Tim, do you think this is the norm now or pattern that is starting to occur amongst quarterbacks, staying as physically long as possible? You see Ben Roethlisberger, even though he flirted with the retirement, and I don't think anyone really believed him, he's played 14 years. You look at Phillip Rivers, he's played 14. Breeze, 17. Brady, 18. Eli, 14. Palmer, 15. So you got a lot of these quarterbacks, and they're still playing really good football, especially Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers. I think he has 13, 14 years, and they're playing at a high level. Do you think now, because of the 7-8 quarterbacks that are continuing to play at a high level, the way the game is going, protecting quarterbacks even more, this is going to be the norm where quarterbacks are playing 15, 16, 17 years?
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's not going to be everybody, but I think the guys that are, you know, really, really gifted, and so, you know, the arm strength sticks around and you know, that type of thing. I think about how Steve Young's career ended in that hit he took. I believe it was Aeneas Williams that kind of, you know, knocked him out.
I still feel that hit, man. Goodness.
Yeah, and like it's right. Like you can still see it, and so that really doesn't happen, especially to the, you know, to the guys that you mentioned. you know, remember the hit on Matt Moore in the in the playoff game against the Steelers? You know, you don't see Brady or Breeze, or you don't see those guys get hit that way. And so I think because of that, guys are going to play longer. You know, I mentioned it earlier that, look, I backed Eli up for 2 years. I played 7 snaps, and all of them were, kind of just handoffs at the end of the game. I mean, I think because some of these guys, you know, see things well because they've got a great grasp of what they're doing on offense, and the fact that, you know, they get naturally protected by the way people are being coached to hit the quarterback, as well as, you know, how quick the whistle is and what gets flagged, I do think it leads to longer careers.
Now, looking at last season, some of the surprising teams, more notable, the Dallas Cowboys, which team do you think will have the most trouble sustaining that type of play or sustaining that success? Will it be a Dallas Cowboy team who, you know, the best running team in the National Football League? Many thought that, they wouldn't even win the conference, 8-8, 9-7 possibly, and then a rookie quarterback comes in. It kind of went downhill from that in many eyes, but Dak came in and did a wonderful job. Do you think that's a team that in their second year, a second-year quarterback, that they could potentially be a team because of all the things they had go right for them last year? They could be one of these, say, a Carolina team where Carolina goes to the Super Bowl, then the next following year, they don't even win the division. They don't even get into the playoffs.
Right. Yeah, I mean, look, 13 wins for Dallas and what, you know, should be a competitive division with, you know, good quarterbacks on every other team. I mean, getting back to 13 wins, you know, certainly be tricky. But I'll tell you what, I mean, you mentioned the NFC South. Look, Carolina is better than 6-10, I believe, in terms of their talent and how they'll play. That's another team that when you just look at, you know, the other quarterbacks in that division. So Atlanta winning 11 games, they went to the Super Bowl, but, you know, we've seen people with that Super Bowl hangover and what that does. And then you look at the AFC West, Kansas City, you know, decided to cut their best receiver and draft a quarterback in the first round that's not going to play. You know, so I think it's a good possibility that, you know, you look at the NFC South and the AFC West and you have these teams with, you know, surpassing double-digit wins, you know, could certainly come back to earth, especially when you consider the fact that, you know, you have other good teams with good quarterbacks in that division.
Tim Hasselbeck is with us, ESPN NFL analyst. Tim, how's baseball camp going so far this week?
You know, so far so good. So, I mean, I hope Chase knows that, you know, friend status is in jeopardy with me and Willie now. You know what I mean?
That's right.
Willie and I spending time with each other off air. Yeah. I think, you know, the friend status with Chase, especially on an 8-day vacation, is now
out of sight, out of mind. Chase is going to be very upset about this.
Since my friend status with D. Mace is in jeopardy because I'm going to have to fill in as the basketball coach again, and he gets worried about me running up the score. So, bad news.
Tim, don't take it easy on nobody, man.
So, Tim, we got into this whole pro football focus article yesterday, and the Titans have, in their mind, the third best roster based on their rating system of their starters. I'm curious for you, when you see all these different websites now that are emerging, ESPN almost has their own family of people that are putting their own numbers out there, like the QBR and some of the other things now. Mm-hmm. What metrics do you look at, if any, to sort of match up with what your eyeballs see when you're evaluating teams and players?
Well, here's what I would say to, you know, you mentioned QBR, and I know there's been a lot of criticism, you know, associated with that. If I could just quickly, because I was part of the conversation and, you know, process as ESPN was coming up with QBR. Basically, if you take passer rating, so like, for example, if you throw a Hail Mary touchdown pass at the end of the game down 21 points, it drastically improves your passer rating. If you spike the ball on a 2-minute drive at the end of the first half, it can negatively affect your passer rating, even if it was a good play. If you complete a pass at the line of scrimmage, you complete a screen pass and the running back takes it 50 yards, you know, for a touchdown, that impacts your passer rating as much as, you know, getting hit in the chin and throwing a 50-yard post for a touchdown on 3rd and 8. And so when I was a part of the conversation in terms of coming up with QBR, we felt like that had to be weighted differently. We felt like a 3rd down conversion, you know, where the ball is traveling down the field further than just flipping it out at the line of scrimmage, even though the net result might be the same in terms of yards, you know, down the field or yards gained on the play, that it should be valued differently. That being down in a game versus being up in a game, those things should be valued differently. And so I'll say this, even though that there's criticism on QBR and it's not a perfect number or perfect metric, QBR is superior to passer rating. I don't have any question about it in terms of, I know my conversations with it, concerning it as it was being built, as well as other people's input in that. So I do think that is more valuable, and it's not perfect. I'll be the first one to tell you that. So,
what about team ones? Because that is interesting to me, because I follow baseball closely, and pitcher versus batter, there's no question that the numbers you get on each individual player are very intricate. But when you try to do it for hockey or football, when the pieces have to all fit together, especially football, when you got 11 guys in one unit and you got guys doing completely different things, an offensive lineman as opposed to a running back or a quarterback, then what do you look at to try to evaluate a team? Because analytics are continuing to move forward. There's more technology. There's more information coming out every year.
Yeah, and some of the stuff, like take sacks, for example. Sacks oftentimes, you know, lead people to feel a certain way about an offensive line. But, you know, backs, quarterback, tight ends, receivers, they all play a huge role in terms of sacks. You know, quarterbacks, you know, especially, but some of those other players as well. So I'll say this, you know what, in terms of I feel like I pay attention to the I guess what I would do is I pay a lot of attention in terms of scoring efficiencies once you get inside the 30-yard line on both sides of the ball. I think defensive stats can often be misleading if, you know, you've given up one, you know, plus 70 run. But generally speaking, plus 20 runs, are a pretty good indicator of run defense. You know, you look up, especially later in the year, on plus 20 runs, and it's pretty telling in terms of how somebody defends a run. I think it's a very good defensive stat in terms of, you know, what it tells you about how people pursue to the ball, which it oftentimes is how well you defend the run. And then offensively, I think it ends up being 3rd down efficiencies as well as, you know, scoring efficiencies once you get to the plus 30.
Have you seen the 30 for 30 on the Celtics and the Lakers, the 3 series?
I haven't. Is it wicked awesome?
It is. It actually is really, really good. I think you would enjoy it. You, of all people.
You sold it bad.
I was a little surprised at you. I mean, you haven't been here that long. I feel like you kind of lost that a little bit.
The Boston stuff?
Yeah, the Boston flavor to your, you know, you could just morph, you know, right back into that.
You know what I realized? I actually referenced Bledsoe earlier. So I was in college, Bledsoe's a Patriots, and he showed up at a Red Sox game with a Mariners hat on.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's like, it was like, really? So I remember when my brother became a starter in Seattle, And he showed up and he was wearing a Mariners hat. And I was like, really, dude? And he was like, you have to. You know, that's the thing. Like, when am I going to go to Bridgestone in a Bruins jersey? Like, put on my Ray Bourque jersey and show up at Bridgestone? Like,
that was the predicament for Mookie Betts. He went to the Predators-Bruins game in Nashville. And I'm not sure he even realized that they were playing the Bruins that night. But when he got there, he was like, wait a minute, I got to go easy on the – wearing a Predators jersey.
Yeah.
Because I remember he did an interview with us for our TV broadcast. He goes, I'm playing this one down the middle, because he didn't know.
That's smart.
Because it was smart. Yeah. Like, you know, those hardcore Bruins fans are like, wait a minute. What's he doing wearing a Predators jersey? You know, that it depends on where you sit.
So what I would say is, like, only because I know I'm probably at some point going to run into, you know, overzealous, you know, dads coaching us in the little league, you know, not you, Willie.
Or Darren.
I'm not including Darren in that. So you know, I'm just trying to, you know, keep it cool. That's all.
Yeah. Well, you might run into Darren, overzealous.
I've already told the story. I did our playoff game. I got close, and
but something else happened. What about the guy that heard? He had another episode, Tim.
Well, that's what I said, and I backed off, and he happened to be listening to the show, and I was like, oh boy.
So did that? You have a reputation, whether it's real or not. Let's just keep feeding this.
He has a rep now.
Other coaches pull him and be like, oh, hey, it's Darren. He's coaching the other
McFarland.
Team.
Oh, boy. Oh, yep, boy.
Better watch
your
kid.
The guy that threw second base at the 16-year-old. Yep.
The one that crawled on his belly to the pitcher's mound and started acting like he was throwing grenades.
Man.
Like the minor league coach. That was great.
Oh, my goodness.
Tim, have a great fourth and a great rest of your your week.
Thing. Yeah, you guys do the same.
All right,
good to talk to you.
We'll do it next
week. I'll see you later this week.
You got it.
Oh boy.
All right. See you at the yard.
We'll send the audio to Chase.
Is not gonna like this.
Boy. Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst. We will come back with more here in the third hour, but first Willie is gonna tell you about his fleet of boats and the club that he's in.
Oh, what a great fleet it is. Let me tell you about the Nashville Boat Club. It is fantastic out there. At the three different lakes, our home base is the Percy Priest Lake, which is right up the road from here at our studio. Very easy to get to from where our station is situated. But for you, that you might have Percy Priest on your mind. You could have Center Hill Lake or Old Hickory Lake. They have three different locations. They've now got 11 years of service for what they do, and that is basically a membership to the boat club, which includes access anytime you want. All you do is email and make an appointment. You come out. You're not bringing anything. You're just showing up. There, they've got the life preservers. They've got the boat gassed up. They've got all the water toys you want. If you like inner tubing like we do, they've got it there for you, and it's ready to go. And you're off and cruising on the lake for as long as you want with your friends and family. It's that simple. No more hitching your boat to the wagon, trying to upkeep your boat, the maintenance or anything. They take all that out, and it's going to cost you a lot less money. So find out about memberships at the Nashville Boat Club. If you love being out on the water, this is for you. 232-9100 is the number for more information. Or better yet, go on the web. Check it out for yourself at NashvilleBoatClub.net. That's NashvilleBoatClub.net. Don't buy a boat. Join the club. It's the Nashville Boat Club.
Adam Bingen from the Tennessean will kick off the fourth and final hour on this Wednesday afternoon here of 3D. Darren, Derek, and Donick back here with you. There's been a lot of news on the NBA front. Phil Jackson and the Knicks have mutually parted ways.
Mm-hmm.
Chris Paul has been shipped to the Rockets. I don't know if a lot of people saw that or not. The Rockets give up a slew of players and their first-round pick next year, but that it is interesting. Now, Chris Paul and the Beard in Houston with the Rockets. Miguel Montero has been designated for assignment. He was the catcher for the Cubs. He was the catcher for the Cubs last night. Remember, they sent Schwarber down. Montero was behind the plate last night. Jake Arrieta on the mound. The Nationals, seven stolen bases.
Wow.
Trey Turner had four. Seven stolen bases. And Montero, after the game, basically threw his starting pitcher under the bus. No, not basically.
He did.
He did. And then he was designated for assignment today.
And that's fortunate, because this guy's been playing for a long time, and what he said was not incorrect. The pitcher does have a lot to do with whether a base is stolen or not.
But Jake Arrieta's their star. And
He hasn't been a star this year.
Well, I know, but he's being paid like one of their stars. Montero is not.
True.
So he throws the other guy in the bus.
I was still startled by that.
You mean what he said after the game?
No, I was startled that they made such a rash move on Montero. And he's been around a while. He's a veteran catcher.
Mm-hmm.
They must have somebody else in mind.
Well, it happens.
It shows you the value of a guy like David Ross. I mean, things have not gone real smooth
right
for the Cubs this year. They have had their struggles, and David Ross was their leader catcher last year. He retires, and you know they have a young catcher in Wilson Contreras, plus this veteran in Montero, who's always been a good hitter. That's not the only reason they're hovering around 500, but wow. The year after is always tough. When you win a championship, that next year is tough.
You got to relive it. I mean, that expectation is high. So, did you guys hear this story? This story's crazy. I mean, some guys, you know what? When you've retired, and you kind of go off into the sunset, and somebody asks you a question, or you know, asks you about your career or your life. Some things are just better left unsaid. You know, some things are just better left. Don't say it. Don't. Just, I'm going to stop you before you even go down that path.
Like John McEnroe?
Yeah, like John McEnroe. Let me stop you, John, before you even go down that path.
It's not worth it. No. Ever
because
going
whatever
to
you say, people that hate you is going to misconstrue it. People that like you are going to, they know what you think. But don't even do it. Clinton Portis, right? Clint Portis was one of the best running backs that come out of the U, Miami, Florida. He had a nice career.
He had
played
some good
with Washington,
years. Yeah.
Played with Denver. So he had some good years, made some good money. Now he's retired, obviously. And the headlines, check this out, the headlines on ESPN is ex-Redskins running back Clint Portis was ready to commit murder until a friend talked him out of it. So, everyone, you know, if you follow Clint Portis, you know his money problems and his money manager taking his money. Former Washington Redskin, Clint Portis, he contemplated killing one of his former managers after losing millions of dollars in various investments, helping to wipe out part of his NFL fortune. So he did a story. SI is getting some really good stories now. They do the Vince Young story.
They're on a roll.
They do this Clinton Portis story. They've done some other stories. I mean, goodness gracious. Portis, he did a story for SI. Portis recounted a night 4 years ago in which he sat in his car outside a building, holding a gun and waiting on one of his managers he felt had ruined him financially. Portis had made $43.1 million in his nine-year NFL career. Most of it had either been spent or lost through investments, or one suit claims bank withdrawals without his consent. So obviously his money manager was taking money. An anonymous friend, a television producer who had been trained as a family therapist, talked him out of committing murder. But Portis said he went there, sitting in his car late at night outside a building in Washington, D.C., with one purpose. It wasn't to beat him up, Portis told SI. It was to kill him. The story does not say who Portis was waiting on that night in 2013, rather saying he was waiting for one of several managers who had handled his funds. I am thankful that I have never been in a situation where I've had someone that I've trusted take money from me. So I don't know how that feels. I know how it feels when I made a bad decision on spending some money and lost, you know, as an investment lost. But that was because it was a house, and that was because we bought it and ended up losing money right after the market crashed. So I know how I felt about myself. I was disappointed in myself because usually we give ourselves a 24 to 48 hour time period to make a decision, and we didn't, and we paid for it. So I know how I felt. I'm pretty sure he felt even worse when you've entrusted someone to take care of your money and they've taken it from you. But to years later, I just think some things are better left unsaid. Like, I don't understand this. maybe it's to get your name back out there. But I don't understand that part. I just – some things are better left unsaid. Isn't there planning a murder?
You're saying that would be best just
yeah,
to keep
just,
it to yourself?
Yeah, just keep it to yourself.
Or your little circle.
Because you were planning a murder.
Yeah.
You had a gun. You were planning a murder. Keep that. Do you really want to say this? Do you really want me to write this down?
You've heard the term keep it in house?
Exactly.
You're saying keep that in house?
Are you saying keep this in house, or do you want me to put this in publication? He was okay with something just better left unsaid. I just don't get it. Don't get it whatsoever.
I think you would be hard-pressed to find somebody to give you resistance on that thought.
Well,
I mean,
along those lines,
four years later? Hey,
yeah.
Hey, just so you know, just want to let you – we'll take you back to 2013. I was going to murder this guy, so I'll give you his name. Write this down. That's kind of an awkward
– And, of course, it's not on the same level, but Vince Young's article certainly brought back some things in the past that I was certainly very – curious to read about, about when he missed the flight to Philadelphia, when he went missing for the day, and his recap of that story. So under the category of some things are better left unsaid, it was a great article to read. Do you think Vince Young helped or hurt himself at all by venting and
no
sort of telling all?
No. I don't.
You don't think he helped himself? Did you think he hurt himself?
Well, yeah, because what is he accomplishing at this point? What are you accomplishing? I mean, one, if you're going to cast stones,
he's entertaining us.
Very clear that he's angry at Jeff Fisher. But if you're going to cast stones to me, you need to make sure your house is in order. And it's not like his house has been in order the whole time either. I mean, he has certainly made a ton of missteps. I'm not saying that they're I understand there are things with Jeff Fisher, there are other things that happen, but what's the point of coming out with all that?
Well,
I don't know what you're accomplishing.
I think I know you've read the story, but I think when you watch the interview too, I think he blames himself too.
Well, look,
he does, to a point,
but then it seems like every time you're starting to feel
– Well, I think that's what everybody –
And then he goes back to –
But I think that's what a lot of people –
The blame game.
Yeah, but I think that's what a lot of people – this is what I found out. And I do get, caught up in it. Well, why are you blaming other people? And why are you making excuses? This is what I found. You're asking me why something happened or didn't happen. And I'm blaming myself, yes. But if you want me to get a whole story, I got to give it all to you.
Right.
I can't just say, yes, it was my fault. I know it was my fault. Well, everybody, okay, it was. But I'm not going to let them off the hook either.
Right.
I'm going to, yes, it
to
was
be
my
fault.
Exactly, I'm being honest. It was my fault. But if this person hadn't done that as well, maybe things would have, or if I'd have handled it a lot better, things would have went another direction. So when we look at it and say it's an excuse, I don't think it's an excuse. It's everybody does it. It's like, well, why did you do that? Your kids, well, why did you do that? Because I do that to my son. Why do you do that? Well, I know, but and a lot of times I don't want to hear the but I know what he's getting at. Well, this happened. But you see what I'm saying?
Look, I can only give you my perspective, Derek. Uh-huh. And the perspective I have is I didn't learn anything from that article because I lived it.
Well, okay? I did because I wasn't here.
I understand that. I get that. But I lived it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard for me to have sympathy, which there is a part of me that does, because I feel bad that it – but I also know that he has to take a lot of the blame. I feel like you can appreciate that. Let me just tell you this story. In 2010, Terry McCormick and I, for TitanInsider.com, we covered all the games.
Mm-hmm.
We traveled to every road game.
Mm-hmm.
And – in Miami, and Will, you may be able to help me with that. So I think there was a game in San Diego against the Chargers. Then they had the bye week. Mm-hmm. I was out there in San Diego for that game. Then they got beat by the Chargers. There was a bye week, and right after they got beat by the Chargers, the next day is when they made the trade for Randy Moss, which, as we know, ended up being a disaster. So then they have the bye week, and then the next game was in Miami, down there. I was down there for that. So after the game, after everything's done, we leave the stadium, back to the hotel.
Yeah, they win or lose.
They lost. Okay. They lost to the Dolphins. Kerry Collins gets hurt really bad at the end of the first half. Vince Young was not starting. Mm-hmm. Kerry Collins started that game. Vince Young played the second half. Mm-hmm. It was very clear Kerry was hurt. And so they were playing again next week, and, of course, it was very clear it looked like it was going to be Vince Young as the starter. Mm-hmm. Well, I get wind from some of my sources that Vince Young wasn't on the team playing back. Neither was Chris Johnson. Mm-hmm. That they had stayed over, and they were partying with Brandon Marshall down in South Beach. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to ask you, for a guy that spent 15 years in the NFL and understand what it takes to last 15 years, this is in 2010. Mm-hmm. He's now getting his opportunity. No, there's been a lot of stuff going on. By the way, the next game mm-hmm. was against the Redskins here. Do you remember what happened
in that
game? The meltdown. That was the shoulder pads in the stands. Mm-hmm. The week prior was in Miami. So I call Jeff Fisher. I go to the press conference. I ask him some questions he didn't like, and I knew he didn't like them. The next day I call him and I tell him that I'm going with this article that Vince stayed behind and partied in Miami with Brandon Marshall and Chris Johnson. He's set to be the starter again. Mm-hmm. And here he is down there and obviously Jeff didn't like it. He said it's a non-story, and I told him we'll agree to disagree. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to ask you, for a guy that is trying to – so all this stuff that's happened, and here he is being the starter again, is that the move you're looking for to extend your career? Is that something you would have done?
No.
Okay.
No, it wouldn't have been.
So, but I understand there's all kinds of other stuff. No.
But that's when you're
when
just
you
getting back
down,
in the starting
when
lineup,
you break down,
you can't do that.
You can't do that, okay? It's a matter of common sense. You mm-hmm. can't do that.
Even if the coach lets you, you shouldn't even ask. Because you're just
behind.
Now getting
you're
back in the starting
back to
lineup.
You're back to being the starter
yeah.
again.
Yeah. Even if you ask the coach, which I'm pretty sure he probably did, ask the coach before the game, because he's just not going to ask him. Ask him before the game, if you know, whatever, stay back, family, whatever. And coaches tend to say, okay. You know,
there's a story. You know, he was late for practices before the Steelers. I mean, stuff happened, okay? Mm-hmm. And so he has to take blame for
a lot
of this.
And I think he has.
But every time he did, I felt like then he would go back and then start assessing blame.
But he's telling you his truth. That's what he believes. I'm taking responsibility for what I did.
But
this is some other stuff that happened too.
Right.
So but that's any and everybody. They're not going to just give you – they're not going to say, you know what? Yeah, I did that. Even somebody that's committed a murder, you put them in front of a judge, what is their counsel is going to say, well, yeah, but look at what happened during his life.
I wish it was different for him, but I also know that he didn't do everything it took to last in the league.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so it's hard for me to have sympathy because he didn't do everything that he needed to do to stay a pro and to be playing in the NFL.
No, you're right.
And I felt like every time he's ready to say that, and he does, then he reverts back to then assessing blame.
Yes, because he's telling you his truth.
Okay. But I'm just giving you my perspective.
Yeah.
You didn't play with him. Uh-huh. You were off in Baltimore.
Exactly.
And so you got a little bit different perspective than mm-hmm. me.
So I take it for what it's worth, and I listen to him, and he admitted his faults and his wrongs, and it takes two to tangle. So if I'm going to tell this story, because Fisher's not going to tell a story. So I'm going to tell my part, and then I'm going to tell you, you know, everything that happened too.
Now, some things for him on his side. Mm-hmm. This thing was turning – had already turned into a dumpster fire.
Oh,
here.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a full-blown dumpster fire here. And by 2010, that season, mm-hmm. as we know, we would learn Jeff Fisher, that would be it for him. Mm-hmm. The Randy Moss thing was a disaster. I mean, this thing, the wheels were completely off of it. He didn't help, but Jeff Fisher, I mean, there was so much blame to be tossed around. This thing was a grease fire in the kitchen that you couldn't put out.
No, you're right. It started from day one when you drafted him.
Well, that's 2006. I'm talking about by this point, 2010, this thing was completely off the rails. And it wasn't just Vince's fault. There was a lot of people standing in line to take blame for that.
Of course. Absolutely.
Including Jeff Fisher.
Yep.
That'll do it for hour number 3 of 3D. We will come back with Adam Venkin from the Tennessean. We do that next.